tonight on Arena. The Midnight Sky, Soul and Songs for While I'm Away are the movies up for review. And John Mullen talks to us about his new book, The Artful Dickens. +51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Thursday, of course, is our usual night for film reviews, but given the week that's in it, we're bringing that forward to Monday for this Christmas week. Three films on the menu: The Midnight Sky, a post-apocalyptic thriller directed by and starring George Clooney as a dying scientist, Augustine Lofthouse, the last man on Earth in the year 2049. Next up is Soul, new musical from Disney Plus. And Pete Docter, creator of Pixar classics like Up and Inside Out. This is set in the world of jazz and New York City and a few other places. Finally, the boys are back in town in Songs for While I'm Away, new documentary about Phil Lynott, legendary frontman of Thin Lizzy. Joined this evening by Ro McDermott and John Maguire. And let's start with The Midnight Sky. George Clooney, the last man on Earth. In fact, he's up in the Arctic Circle. He's not the only person in the film, however.
Did I say that it's
Ro McDermott and John Maguire? I did, yes. John, what's the setup?
Well, the setup is that Augustine, played by George Clooney, this is Clooney's first film role in 4 years, and he also directs himself, which is a bit of a challenge, and becomes a bit of a challenge. He plays this terminally ill Augustine Lofthouse, always Augustine, never Augie or Gus or Tino. He's the last man on Earth. He's hiding out in this remote Arctic research station in 2049 after an unspoken, unexplained apocalypse called The Event has basically killed almost everybody on Earth. A few survivors have left the Arctic Research Station to go back underground bunkers and create a new civilization. But they've left behind a little 8-year-old girl played by the preternaturally poised Quailene Springall. Eventually, Augustine meets Iris, as the little girl is known, just at the point where he makes contact with the Aether, which is this spaceship with a crew of five.
Let's have Ro tell us a little bit about the... I suppose that's the earthly part of the story.
Earthbound stuff, yeah.
So Ro McDermott, maybe you tell us about the space part of the story, because we've a group of people up there.
Yeah, so the Aether is the spaceship and it's returning from a voyage to K23, which is a formerly hidden moon of Jupiter that the ship's crew have been exploring as a possible alternative to Earth. So good timing to be doing that exploration given the event that is happening. And the ship's crew members are a appealing enough bunch, or at least the actors are. Felicity Jones is all perky radiance as a resourceful Sully who is pregnant, and her partner is David Oyelowo. I will say I've never seen a couple have the least amount of chemistry. This is the least amount of chemistry I've seen an on-screen couple for a while, but they're delightful actors. They have Damien Bichir, who is underused as the overly jovial Sanchez, and there's Tiffany Boone, who is Maya, who is kind of a younger astronaut who is about to experience her first spacewalk even. But what is happening is that the film's two settings of Augustine and the Aether is that Augustine is trying to get in contact with the Aether, and he and Iris, the little girl, have to trek through blizzardy conditions to a weather station in order to do so. And he wants to warn the Aether crew members about what is happening on Earth.
Yeah,
so it's kind of cutting back and forth between these two spaces and a flashback to Augustine growing up and becoming kind of this expert on space.
Yeah, we see Clooney as a young boy. Well, it's not Clooney himself.
An actor called Ethan Peck. Looks really like him.
Yeah,
but they've used Clooney's voice, if you've noticed.
Right.
Peck couldn't do a Clooney, but Clooney voiced over him.
Well, let's have a listen to...
This is Gregory Peck's grandson.
Oh, yeah, sure. Listen, it's all royalty, isn't it? There you go. Let's have a listen to a clip where the people in the spaceship are, I suppose, in some ways nice for them. They don't know that the event has taken place on Earth. So they're just going to wonder, why have we lost contact with ground control? It's not a Major Tom moment. It's a slightly different type of moment. But as you say, Ro, the Clooney character is trying to contact them and trying to let them know what's going on.
This is
Lake Hazen, the weather station.
Lake Hazen, I can't tell you how happy I am to hear your voice. For some reason, you're the only person who wants to talk to me. We've lost contact with NASA and everyone else.
Do you have information on our transmission blackout?
Lake Hazen, are you there?
How much have you picked up about the conditions on Earth?
We've received nothing.
I wish I...
I'm sorry, Lake Hazen. I missed that last transmission.
Is that mission control?
Lake Hazen, are you receiving this?
I don't know all the details. I know it was a mistake.
Started with...
So there you go. That's a clip there from Midnight Sky, the George Clooney film. And you heard the voices of Damien Bashir, Felicity Jones and David Oyelowo on the spaceship. And Kyle Chandler, of course, well. And away off in the distance in the kind of the radio garble was the voice of George Clooney on Earth. Two stories like that, they either build into each other's tension, or you're just into one and you say, I don't want to go back to Earth, or you're on the Earth one and you say, I don't want to go to space, I want to stay with this story. How does it work, John?
That's how exactly how it works. The tension, whatever tension is in either story, is immediately dissipated by the fact that we have to cut relentlessly from one to the other. The story on the ground is interesting and carries all the kind of messages that all of Clooney's directorial films have carried. They have a strong social message. The stuff in space is very similar to, a lot of it is very similar to what Clooney would have done with Alfonso Cuarón in Gravity a couple of years ago. That's the best scene in the film, in fact, is a spacewalk that's conducted with Felicity Jones and a few of the others. When they go out in space and there's a meteor storm, or whatever you might call it, a meteorite storm, and the ship is damaged. And that's quite a good scene. And Clooney was obviously paying attention when he was working with Cuarón. But this is a film that finds it very difficult to create a real moment of suspense. It's all very prescriptive.
John maybe has touched on it there, Ro. We've had, I suppose, our fair share of post-apocalyptic type movies. Does this bring anything new to the table? I think it was in the Jimmy Kimmel interview that Clooney talked about what we're capable of doing to one another if we don't pay attention. We know that we can destroy this planet without any help from anybody else. We don't need any invaders from outer space to help us in that one. Does this tell us anything new? Does it bring something new to this genre, Ro?
I really didn't think it did, either in terms of message or even in style. You know, the Ether looks from the outside like a Baroque Christmas ornament as shot by Stanley Kubrick. And on the inside, inside the spaceship, everything seems very familiar. Even the characters are very archetypes, and they don't really go into much detail about them. And then when it cuts between settings, as John said, each setting has a way of being less gripping than the one that the film is just cut away from, and just adds up to nothing. And even the fact that the event is not, there's no details given around this event, it just feels like the end of the world as we know it, as metaphor. And the film doesn't pretend to be fun. It puts its heart very much on its sleeve. It puts a social message on its sleeve, but that message isn't very developed. And I feel like every homegrown apocalypse film is a deadly serious warning about our ecological self-destruction, which is important and we should pay attention. But this film isn't giving us anything new to pay attention to, which I felt like was a very big problem.
Some great actors, though. I mean, it is an extraordinary cast. You've named some of them there: Felicity Jones, Damien Bashir, David Oyelowo, Clooney himself.
I'd watch Clooney paint his shed. I mean, I've no problem with Clooney as an actor. He's very watchable. He's always very watchable. He's gotten older. He's nearly 60. So he has the creased face. He's a great beard.
Happens
he's playing
all,
older. Does he's playing older as well, and that I like too. I think that is as much of a development as is in the film. It's Clooney's personal development as an actor, but not so much as a director.
I was going to say but there's a but
there is a but
so
it's,
stars
it's
from you
kind of boring
John.
Two I'm afraid
you two know. You're saying, what did you think, Ro? Are you as down on it as John seems to be?
I think one thing is interesting is that George Clooney has always had this reputation as being a bachelor and he was never going to settle down. And of course, now he's married and he has two young children. And I think you can very much see that in this film. And a lot of films talk about parent-child relationships. You have Armageddon, Gravity, First Man, Ad Astra, Interstellar. And he brings that into this film. It's very much about family and about children, about the next generation. And I'm sure in person that is delightful and endearing. And on screen, it's a bit sentimental and clunky. So I'm going to say 2.5.
Two and a half from you, but a special mention, I think, from both of you for the young woman, Quillen
Springall, a superb performance. Yeah, really. almost mute all the way through. She has to do it all with her face and with her eyes, and she does a great job.
That'll be film acting for you. She's one to watch for. Right, let us move on then. Oh, by the way, I'll find it here while I'm talking.
Netflix, I think Christmas Day or Christmas Eve.
I'm not sure. If I just stretch my hand over, Netflix from the 23rd of December 23rd. Is the actual date for Midnight Sky. Let us move on then to Soul. This is the one that's available from Christmas Day. It'll be available on Disney Plus, latest from the partnership of Disney and Pixar, which has been, it has to be said, very fruitful. Up and Inside Out, like those two films, we're grappling with big existential questions here. What makes our personality, or I suppose, what is our essence? I mean, Soul is the title of the film. Roe, is it wearing its soul on its sleeve, I guess?
Absolutely. So this is directed by Pete Docter, who was kind of the big idea Pixar brain beside kind of more out of the box Pixar films like Inside Out, which was about emotions and was very intricate and very intelligent, and Up. So he's coming up with another kind of deep looking, intuitive, metaphor laden film, except he's taken on the kind of lofty ambition of exploring the meaning of life. So Soul imagines a plane of existence called the Great Before, and this is where our personalities are determined before we're ever sent to Earth to be born. And this is a plane of existence in which every soul must find its spark of a particular interest with the help of mentors like Abraham Lincoln, Mother Teresa, Muhammad Ali, and only then, when you find your spark, do you take on your corporeal form and you enter Earth to find your destiny. And Joe Gardner, who is voiced by Jamie Foxx, is a middle school teacher who always dreamed of being a jazz musician and finally gets his chance to join an incredible jazz band, and the day of the gig has a terrible accident and finds himself in the great beyond and needs to find his way back to Earth, and that's where the story begins.
Right, so he's in the great
big
beyond.
Big questions about life and purpose.
Yeah, the great beyond is the other location, which is after Earth, but the great before is just before the souls go down, and stuck in the great before is Tina Fey, 22.
A very cute little character who has stubbornly resisted all attempts to find her spark. That's what you do in the great before, and start her life while Joe is desperate to get back to the life that he just left. We don't often expect kids' movies to start with the death of the hero. Bambi held off for a few minutes before it killed a major character. But then Soul isn't your typical kids' movie. And in fact, I'm not even 100% sure it is a kids' movie.
Right.
This is a very complicated film full of big ideas and concepts like, where do personalities come from? Is it nature or nurture, parenting or psyche? What makes you you? Yeah. And when you are you, what makes you want to continue to be you? What is it that is deep inside you that makes you want to play music, to paint a picture, to come into RTE and talk about a film? You know, it's really complicated. It has a PG cert, but you need the P to be sitting beside the G, because there are going to be big questions about this afterwards.
Well, let's listen to a clip which is the first encounter that Joe in his soul form. And the animation changes beautifully from the streets of New York into these little soul bubbles type of thing. I don't know how you describe them. Beautiful looking thing. So this is Jamie Foxx as a Joe in soul form, where he encounters Tina Fey's 22 for the first time. She is unteachable, it would have to be said, if she was in a school on Earth.
22 has been at the U Seminar for quite some time and has had such notable mentors as Gandhi, Abraham Lincoln and Mother Teresa.
I made her cry.
Ignore that.
Put me down.
We're truly glad to have you here, Dr. Borgensen. It is an honour having you prepare 22 for Earth.
I'm going to make you wish you never died.
Most people wish that, 22.
Off you go. Bye.
In fact, we just see Jamie Foxx there. Richard Ayoade was the voice that we heard.
It's very funny, Sean. It's a very funny film as well.
John mentioned Roe as he was speaking there about this whole idea of, is this a kids' movie? Is this an adult movie? Who is the movie actually for? And again, you're saying that there are lots of subversive things going on, particularly on here, particularly when we say that it is billed as family entertainment.
Yeah, I think that was something interesting when I was watching it. I did have a few moments of saying, I really don't know if kids are going to respond to this as much as adults will. And I think Inside Out was such an intricate, intelligent dive into the world of emotions and how we process emotions, but it was also very consistently funny, and the visuals were very bright and brightly coloured and fun. And the visuals in this are beautiful. The depiction of the Great Before is unprecedented. The way the inhabitants look, the way they move through it, it's glowing, it's iridescent, it's beautiful. But the visuals are also more muted and subtle in terms of their design and their palette. And I think younger children might prefer the more brightly coloured visuals of Inside Out and other Pixar offerings. I also didn't find it as funny. And I think it's beautiful and it's a lovely message. And I think particularly in COVID, when people are thinking about the things that bring them joy and that this isn't necessarily always work, and having that separation and having that balance, I think those messages will really hit home. But with adults more so than children. So I'll be really interested to see how children respond to it.
Let me actually play it, because I do want to hear the voice of Jamie Foxx within the midst of this. And this is where he's introduced to the concept of the Great Before. Jamie Foxx and Alice Braga is in here in the midst of this mix.
Is this heaven?
No.
Is it H-E double hockey sticks?
Hell.
Quiet coyote. It's easy to get turned around. This isn't the great beyond. It's the great before.
The great before?
Oh, we call it the U Seminar now. Rebranding.
Does this mean I'm dead?
Not yet. Your body's in a holding pattern. It's complicated. I'll get you back to your group. Come on, little souls. Get on up here.
There you go. There's the Great Before explained to you now. John, you were actually talking about watching this with a younger child.
I watched this with my 9-year-old, and there is a key moment, a switch, if you like, about 20 minutes in, and he just said nope, and that was it. He was out. But I finished it, and I'm very glad I did, because this is a very strange but a very big-hearted film that overflows with ideas about love and friendship and appreciating the gift of life. The music is superb. Graham Norton voices a character called Moonwind. He's this astral traveller that helps 22 and Joe Gardner get back to the rightful places. And I think it's my favourite of all the voices in all the Pixar films. And their voice work is just superlative.
He started life as an actor, didn't he?
Norton is just beautiful in this film. He's a great character and he does it so well.
Stars from you, John?
4 for me. I really liked this. I felt emotional afterwards.
Yeah, but did the question mark around the
I'm not sure kids are going to get it.
Okay. What are you saying, Ro?
I'm going to give it a 4 as well. I think I was a little bit disappointed, just because to me, Inside Out was such a perfect film in terms of balancing the intelligence and the big ideas and the humour and the fun visuals for kids. So it felt slightly disappointing. But disappointing for Pixar is a different realm.
I have to say,
the music in the film. The music in the film is stunning, and it has to be because it's about jazz, and there were a number of consultants, and it's very good on kind of centering black characters and black experiences. And there's a great scene about black men in a barber shop, and it's really lovely to see Pixar really taking those ideas of diversity and moving it forward. Yeah, a little bit disappointing, but on a Pixar scale, which is different. So 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5 is what a disappointing Pixar gets. Sounds about right. Finally then, award-winning director Emma Reynolds explores the life of Phil Lynott, gifted and troubled Thin Lizzy star. New documentary called Songs for While I'm Away. Let's get a little teaser taster.
One Monday morning, we called down to the headmaster and he goes, what do you want to do? Do you want a good, steady trade, a job, or do you want to be a dirty rock musician?
What a great line that is from the documentary Songs for While I'm Away. What story, what Phil Lynott story are we getting here, Ro McDermott?
So, of course, most people know, but to those who don't, so Phil Lynott was born in Birmingham to a single mother, Philomena Lynott, and he was eventually raised by his grandparents in Crumlin, and he was this expressive, artistic person, and he was determined to have a life that extended beyond Dublin, and got that through his music. He just became an icon and became so representative for an entire generation of a young man from Crumlin. Horn, who suddenly turned up on Top of the Pops with his band and toured America. And I think Emer Reynolds, to me, she directed The Farthest, which was an Oscar-nominated documentary, and she's such a beautiful, empathetic director. And I think what she does here is really interesting, because she eschews the usual kind of rock doc genre tropes, and she uses Thin Lizzy's songs and Linnett's deep, often poetic lyrics as a way of illustrating the complexity of his thinking and his desire to connect. And there are, of course, interviews with Linnett's friends, bandmates, music experts, including Hot Press's editor Niall Stokes. But it's very artistic and it's very impressionistic. So Emer Reynolds will take the lyrics for songs like Wild One, which is about geese and them fleeing Ireland, but she'll use them to explore Linnett's feelings about his mother.
Right.
So she's not saying these are the connections Linnett was innately drawing, but she's offering an interpretation and giving the audience the tools with which to bring their own interpretations to his music. So it's a new way of looking at it.
Yeah, there are potential downsides, though, to that type of approach. While there may be a great artistry involved in it, John McGuire, I suppose what I would fear is, do we airbrush over the bits then that are difficult?
Hey, you mentioned in the clip there, do you want to be a dirty rock musician? I want this documentary to be a little dirtier as well. It's a touch too tasteful and a bit too respectful for me to be a true portrait of the man in all his dimensions. Now, there are some extraordinary insights here, from, like Rose said, from his family and friends, and a lot to learn, even for fans. But oddly, the film can't bring itself to face some of the grimmer realities of Linnett's life. It never uses the word heroin, for instance, and Linnett in 1986 became synonymous with heroin, and at a time in Ireland when heroin was a massive problem. There was 10,000 addicts between the canals, and Linnett died of septicemia as a result of heroin, and the film can't say that. And to me, that's, I don't know, I totally get what Ro was saying about the way that Reynolds frames his life through the words of his songs and through the music that he
works
made.
Works right. You were nodding as she said
it
all
works
that.
Very well, but I want to also face the truth of it. And
I think
the film shies away from that.
What about that aspect of things, Ro? Did you feel that it shied away from perhaps those darker aspects?
I do, and I completely agree with John's point. Like, it does gloss over to the point of obscuring the cause of death, Linnett's struggle with drugs. And I think there's even an over-reliance sometimes on viewers' pre-existing knowledge of Linnett's career, because there's references to a disastrous American tour, but the disaster is not expanded upon. So I was sitting there going, I don't know why this was a disaster. I don't know what happened. So I think there are things that are glossed over. And so that is the downside. And then I think the upside is that Emer Reynolds, her approach is so empathetic that she gets interviews with Linnett's daughters, who speak very candidly about losing their father so young, and the complex relationship they have with the songs she wrote about them. And I don't think Emer would have gotten those interviews had she not been so empathetic in her filmmaking. So I think it's a balancing act that doesn't quite work sometimes.
All right.
But there
so
are
how
beautiful
does,
things
how does,
in it.
Balancing act that doesn't quite work sometimes, but wonderful things in it. Stars from you, Ro?
I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5. I think if you know a lot about Phil Linnett, this is a great extra. If you're learning about Phil Linnett, it doesn't quite work.
John?
3 for me, Sean, mostly for Reynolds' ability to tie music and image. She's superlative at that, and she's shown that in a couple of films now. I wanted more, and I suppose in a way that's a good thing when you've watched a film, you know, about a character that sends you off to explore him a little more, the band a little more, the music a little more. But I did feel like I was lacking something.
So what did you say, stars? Sorry,
3 stars.
From John. That is Songs for While I'm Away, the Emer Reynolds documentary, and before that, Ro McDermott and John McGuire speaking to us about Pixar's Soul and George Clooney's The Midnight Sky.